Hi, and welcome to the Holistic Hormonal Health Podcast. I am Hannah Ransom, and today with me I have Bridget Danner, and I'm really excited about this episode because we are going to be talking about gut health and how that's related to the hormones. Bridget has a kind of long history of health things that she's done. She actually has her master's in oriental medicine. She's a licensed acupuncturist. She's a certified functional diagnostic nutrition practitioner. And she also has BridgetDanner.com as her online home and hosts a podcast herself, Women's Wellness Radio. So with that, I would like to welcome Bridget.
Hi, Hannah. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Thank you so much for being here. I think that the gut and hormonal health is something that is often overlooked, and I know that you love talking about gut health. So I'm excited to have you and get some more information from you for our listeners. And I was wondering if first you could just tell us a little bit more about your work and your path to doing it all.
Sure. Well, as you mentioned, I'm an acupuncturist, and I first got into studying natural medicine really more for environmental reasons. Like, I wanted to do something that was good for the planet, and, you know, I wasn't really sure which direction that would go in. And, you know, wanted to, I guess, ended up wanting to being attracted to the idea of working one-on-one with people and talking about health. And when we're using natural medicine, we're living a natural lifestyle to support it. So sort of my side door entrance into natural medicine. So I own a clinic here in Portland, Oregon, and we have a team of different holistic practitioners. And then actually, right around when I was opening that clinic, I also got married and had a baby all at the same time, pretty much, and had my own health crisis that required me to find some new healthcare tools. So I started to have a coach and learn more about nutrition and learn about functional medicine, really for my own healing. And I just enjoyed these tools so much. They were so helpful to me that I wanted to pay it forward and share them with more women. And I was also fascinated with the online world, so started to grow my online presence and was working in fertility for a while, and then kind of broadened it out to women's health. And yeah, I'm having a lot of fun with it. I get to do fun things like have these interviews and meet cool people. So it's really great.
I love it. That's one of my favorite things about the online thing as well, is that just how many people you can reach. And one of my very favorite things from when I first started my business was doing guest interviews and posts and stuff like that, because I was like, you know what? I know that most everyone who ever reads about fertility awareness is not ever going to use it, but I love for people to have an understanding of what it is, that it's a viable option, stuff like that. So that's been one of my favorite things as well. And I also love that you got into it for environmental reasons, because I actually feel like I am half in fertility awareness for environmental reasons as well. So it's really fun to see other people who link that health and environment, because I think they're pretty much the same thing, like the environmental health.
Yeah, sometimes we don't make that link as often as we should, but it's there,
yeah.
Right?
And without the environment being healthy, we can't really be that healthy either. Mm-hmm. So especially with like endocrine disrupting chemicals, which are a big thing of mine that I hate environmentally, but
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, all those birth control pills being peed out into our water.
And that's just one of the things that's supposed to not be very, that's supposed to not be the worst thing, but who knows what they're covering up there. So yeah. Anyway, sidetrack. Yeah, we're supposed to be talking about gut health. So I was wondering if you could speak to a little bit how the gut is actually connected to hormonal health.
Yeah, I think mostly this connection is not made enough, not nearly enough. And then the other 1% of the time, it's sometimes a little bit exaggerated. This is in a like maybe
Interesting.
it's this is 0.001%, but sometimes I hear in the functional medicine community, just fix the gut and you'll get pregnant, which I think is a little oversimplified. But the gut is, yeah, it's this like silent killer that can be going on right in the heart of our bodies. It's such an important system, and we don't understand it very well. We don't, understand our own guts. We don't always treat them very nicely.
Yeah.
And this can really affect our hormones. So I would say the three categories of gut hormone connection are one is if you have a chronic stress happening in the gut, either from chronic inflammation or parasites or bacterial imbalance. That stress is causing a reaction in your body. Your body has to deal with it and manage it. And anytime your body is dealing with chronic stress, it tends to make less sex hormones. There's just only so much to go around. So you might not even really be thinking about your gut that much, or you might have some little symptoms and kind of ignore them. But internally, that's a really big stress on your body, and it can be kind of stealing away from your sex hormones without you realizing. So that's number one. Number two is if we have poor digestion, for there could be various reasons and locations of poor digestion, then we have less nutrients available to make hormones.
Right.
So yeah, hormones are made from, our B vitamins and our fats. And then we have, all these hormonal systems that need little micronutrients to have reactions. And, for example, to grow a healthy egg, you need certain nutrients, and it needs to be available in the bloodstream. So if we're not getting our nutrients, either from poor digestion or poor diet, then we're having a hormone problem. And then the third one is we're learning more and more about what's made in the gut, like the neurotransmitter serotonin is made in the gut. And if we have a very sterile gut environment, if we don't have a, well, it can never really be sterile, but if we have an unhealthy gut microbiome, we make less serotonin, for instance, which isn't exactly a hormone, but it is a neurotransmitter that interacts with our hormones and
Right.
kind of there within the mood category that we associate with hormones.
Yeah.
So the gut's an important place to take care of.
Awesome. Yeah, that's really, really interesting. And yeah, definitely a lot of things interact with our hormones. And I think part of that is because our hormones are in such a delicate balance. One of the things I was curious about that you mentioned is you mentioned little things that we might ignore when you were talking about, I think, the stress on the system. So I would love for you to talk a little bit about what some of those things are that people might actually not realize is maybe a problem, and symptoms that would tell someone, hey, like, get your gut checked out. This might be an issue.
Sure. So I'll share some, and if I miss some, Hannah, feel free to help me out. So one area is skin. Skin pretty much always has to do with something going on in the gut. So acne, which a lot of women complain about, often has to do with gut health. Things like eczema or psoriasis, or even just like dry skin. Now, if you've got like kind of like cracked dry heels, sometimes it's just that your body isn't breaking down fats and isn't, it's not, it's your skin doesn't have its correct layer because it can't get the fats it needs. So often skin problems, if you go to any naturopath with a skin problem, they're going to tell you got to work on your gut. This is, it's guaranteed. Another area is headaches. I had a guest on my podcast and was saying, I'm going to totally misquote this, but he was saying that there was a study saying that 90 something some percent of migraines had, a inflammatory food component. So if you've got headaches, I think you often have to look to the gut.
Okay.
And then just some digestive symptoms. Now, it sounds silly to say, well, digestive system symptoms, why wouldn't you think you had something wrong with your gut? But I do find that people really kind of ignore symptoms or think they're normal. One of the most common ones I hear is loose stool. Like people say, well, I have loose stool, but it's normal because I'm a vegetarian. I get that one a lot. Like, I don't know where that got equated. But no, that's not normal. Your stool should have a certain shape, and it should come out at certain times. Like, people will also say, well, I only go to the bathroom every 2 or 3 days, but that's normal for me.
Right.
Yeah, it's become normal for you, and you've accepted it. But it's not normal to exit toxins out of the body only every few days. So those things seem obvious, but I think we start to, negotiate and start to normalize symptoms. Another one is like what we call a food coma, right? Like, you eat and then you're just totally out of it and you're staring into space. Like, that's usually a reaction. Your system is having an inflammatory immune response that is wearing you out after you eat. So if that's how you feel after you eat or after you eat certain things, I think that's something to look at.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then with the food coma, really quickly, it sounds like you have another point too. So with something like that, would that be something that it's like, if it happens a certain amount of times, if it's like, happening half the time that you eat, or what saturation do you see these things before you're like, ah, that's a problem?
That's a good question. I mean, really, ideally, we shouldn't have a food coma after any meal.
Okay.
But I mean, there will be times, Thanksgiving is the most typical, like, that people say. I mean, if you know, like, well, look, I just totally ate like 5 pieces of pizza and I know I shouldn't. I shouldn't have done that. Like, it just happened. But
yeah,
if it's like, every day after your lunch at work, you're in a food coma. That's something to look at. What do you eat every day for lunch?
Right.
I would say if it's on a regular basis with the regular kind of foods you eat all the time, then that's something to look at.
Okay. And then it sounded like you had another point, did you?
Oh, I was just going to mention bloating.
Okay. And gas.
Gas and bloating, yeah. So it's true that, some of us don't digest certain things as well as others. But for instance, if you are just swelling up, after every meal or at the end of every day to the point where you look pregnant, that's a lot of gas in there. And that could be small intestine bacterial overgrowth, which we're not going to get into too much today. But it's basically like bacteria from the large intestine coming on up into your small intestine, because that little flap between the small and large intestine is weakened, and the peristalsis in the gut is weakened. So now you have bacteria that shouldn't be living that high up into the colon, feeding off your food and making gas. So if you have a lot, you don't eat much beans and you eat a whole bunch of beans and you have gas, maybe not a big deal. But if it's like a regular thing, that's something to look at.
Yeah, definitely. I actually had that experience one time in my life when I was one period of my life when I was eating this diet that at the time I thought was like the pinnacle of health. It was one of those, lifestyle diets. I won't get into the specifics of what it was, but anyway, seriously, every day I felt like I was 5 months pregnant at the end of the day, and I didn't really realize. At the time, I was kind of naive and like just thought, oh, like this will go away eventually, and didn't realize how big of a problem that was. So that's really interesting. If you've ever dealt with that, it is not fun at all.
Yeah, and it's funny, like if it starts to happen over and over again, I don't know. I guess either because you don't know what to do about it or you don't know where it's coming from, you sometimes just start to accept it.
Right. Yeah. And a lot of people don't, especially if you're not in any kind of the more natural health world. I don't think that it really is taught that it's something that you, that is a problem. I mean, of course, it's like everything else. It's like, oh, it's a symptom that you need to suppress. You know, if you are having this happen, then, you know, take, gas X. I don't know. I feel like there's some kind of thing that you can take for gas. I don't know if it's called gas.
Yeah, I think there is a thing called
Okay. Yeah. So anyway, I think that it's definitely thought of as a symptom, or not a symptom, but it's thought of that the symptom is the problem and not necessarily from
Exactly.
the holistic perspective, unfortunately. And also what other problems it might be causing as kind of a cascade effect. Okay, so that would be some of the symptoms that people are looking for. I'm wondering if people are having these symptoms, like what are the tests that they would be able to go get to kind of confirm that they might have these problems or figure out what it is specifically that's causing those problems?
Okay. Yeah, in functional medicine, we like to run tests. That's something we like to do because it gives us definitive information about what's going on rather than guessing. So I'll just mention the three tests that we mainly study in my functional diagnostic nutrition program. Since I'm most familiar with those, let's keep it there. So one is a test of intestinal permeability. And
Okay.
this is a urine test where you drink this like sugary liquid. And there's two types of sugars in there, and one is a large sugar and one is small. And these two sugars can represent the size of molecules that should be or should not be passing through your gut. So if you kind of picture this gut layer, which is actually pretty complicated, but maybe picture it like a net. What should come through that net is small little pieces of nutrient that the body has extracted. And what should not come through are bigger, like immunoglobulin globs, where there's like, say, a pathogen stuck to like an immune complex, something like that, or an undigested particle of food. That should not come through. So a couple of things can go wrong there. One is the gut can become leaky and let those bigger molecules through, which stress the body. They go then in the bloodstream, and then the liver tries to clean them up, and now it's getting overloaded. And then the tiny nutrients should come through. But if the gut lining is unhealthy, say it's been quite inflamed, it starts to kind of almost shrink in on itself, and those little spaces where the nutrients should come through, they're not coming through. So it could go like either way or both ways in this test, and depending on your results, it will let you know if you have a leaky gut or what kind of type of leaky gut you have. So that can be interesting just to get a better idea. Yeah, and the next one is a food sensitivity test. So this is not a food allergy test, which is like a massive histamine reaction just to certain foods. Most of us aren't allergic, like truly allergic to that much. Some people are truly allergic to wheat and have celiac disease, or there's some, but most of us have many food sensitivities potentially. And this is just some inflammatory reaction. So this is a blood test, and they test it against 150 foods and substances, and they see how your white blood cells in your blood are reacting to the food that got introduced, and seeing if they're producing like inflammatory response, or if the size of the lymphocytes are growing. So there's different ways that we could respond, and it checks kind of all of that to see how we respond, and then it gives you results like these foods you're showing an inflammatory reaction to, and then you can eliminate them for at least 3 months, and then you can try to have them back. And, you know, maybe it could change when you heal your gut over time. But it's good information because it can be hard to tell. You can also do things like an elimination diet, which can be helpful. But they can, you know, it can miss. There's so many foods out there, right? And it can be hard to narrow in on all the ones that you're sensitive to. I know when I had my test done, there were some surprises in there that I never would have guessed or checked or what have you. So I really like this test. I think if you're thinking you're sensitive to some things or you've got some undiagnosed gut stuff, it's a really great test and diet change to make to take these out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the last one is a stool test. So this is like an at-home collection of stool that you get to put in little jars and mail away. And this stool test that we run with a company called BioHealth is pretty comprehensive, and it tests for things like H. pylori, which is a bacterial infection in the upper stomach. It can find some candida overgrowth. It can identify certain parasites in the stool, and then just like bacterial imbalance in the stool. And more people than you think have some of these infections. What we talked about earlier is being this hidden stress in the gut that's lurking and perhaps sucking away the energy that's supposed to be going towards your sex hormones.
Yeah.
Because you have this infection that you don't know about.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think that those three definitely sound really, really useful. And I also love that the goal of the sensitive foods is still to try to reintroduce them and see if they're, you know, a permanent sensitivity or if it's something that it can possibly be reintroduced. Because one of my things is I'm kind of one of those people that I think that most people should be able to eat most things if they're in a good state of health. And unfortunately, like, sometimes there's so much over restriction of things just because, like, oh, gluten is bad for you, bar none, or, you know, any number of things. Gluten's just the first thing that comes to my head because so many people, like, just hate gluten. And I love seeing that there's the ultimate goal of, like, trying it again. And,
yeah, these aren't foods that are going to make you keel over and die if you eat them.
Right.
But if you take them out, you might see that certain symptoms abate.
Right.
And then, yeah, usually meanwhile, you know, you're working on your gut health anyways and working on reducing stress, and we'll get into ways to improve your gut. But, yeah, you may be able to tolerate some things again, or, you know, you can play with the amounts of them.
Right.
I'll tell you one that came up for me. Well, the two that came up for me that I freaked out about were like tea, which I love to drink tea.
Oh, wow.
And chocolate, which I wasn't happy to see.
Yeah.
So I took them out, and, you know, to have them back is, you know, I'm just been observing. I definitely have really reduced, like, tea, you know, and
yeah.
I can have herbal teas and stuff, but I've really reduced it, but I'm not perfect. But it got me experimenting with other types of teas. Like, I'll drink like yerba mate, which is, or ingayusa. And so I'll try different things that aren't like a traditional tea. And then chocolate, yeah. I mean, I really found it kind of – chocolate is an IBS trigger. And
uh-huh.
I really did find that when I took chocolate out, it's a little rough on my system. Will I never have chocolate again? Well, no, I'll probably have some chocolate. But I, you know, I got out of what was basically like a bit of like a chocolate habit that I had been in for a long, long time. So yeah, those are a couple of foods I learned about that I hadn't realized in spite of doing various diets and things like that. And what I found was while I was on that 3 months, I had a lot less body pain. That was my biggest improvement. And then like afternoon fatigue really improved too. So, you know, so some of those chronic things where you're like, oh, why am I so sore? Or why am I always tired in the afternoon? And
right.
Those are some of the things, yeah, that we would really love to get rid of.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So did you say this and I just missed it? How many foods do you test on this food sensitivity test?
150.
Okay. I was curious because I was like, whoa, chocolate and tea are on there. There's got to be a lot of foods on there. So
Yeah, and
yeah,
there's
that's
some like additives and like, I don't know, like there's some interesting things on there, food colorings and that kind of thing will be on there too.
interesting. Cool. Okay. And then I'm curious, so with each of these different things, like let's say that somebody did go and get these tests and they found out, well, does this often happen, first of all, that someone has problems in one area, but like not at all in the other two? Or is it kind of like it tends to be they all kind of cross over or?
Say there's often a crossover, although my husband did this. We've been getting tests run as I'm learning this, so he had a clear stool test, but he had still food sensitivities. So I think everybody's a little different, but yeah, I would imagine, especially if you have gut complaints that you haven't been able to figure out, you probably have something off in all the areas to, is likelihood. So yeah, I think, it kind of goes case by case, but yeah, again, if you've had, chronic digestive complaints despite your best efforts, it's probably helpful to check a few areas.
Okay. And obviously, based on what you've said, one of the things that we would do to help improve our gut health would be eliminating, at least for a short amount of time, any foods that we might be sensitive to that are causing more inflammation in our guts. What else would be like the top things that people could do to actually help heal any gut problems that they have?
Yeah, so you can also think about what foods you can have, and that's can be an easier way to look at things. So having more fermented foods, having things like raw kimchi and sauerkraut and kombucha, taking like probiotic supplements, I think is a nice idea too. Some foods that are soothing for the gut are bone broth, which you can make yourself, or I have a recipe I just put on my website for like a super simple broth you can just make from that collagen powder. So, bone broth is awesome, but it can be a little bit of a pain to make. But so you can also just do like a collagen supplement, and that's very soothing. Yeah. Aloe I really like, and it's pleasant and
And is that the juice or the gel? The juice, right?
the juice,
Yeah.
yeah. Although you can, have your own aloe plant and, eat the jelly inside, It's not really a food, but L-glutamine is a supplement that is an amino acid that is needed to turn over your gut cells and make new gut cells. So those are some things to think about adding. Also having lots of fiber. I'm not a proponent of eating certain things raw, like something that's big and hard, like a carrot, isn't really the easiest thing to eat raw. Maybe if it's shredded, it would be easier. But, having a little salad or having some sprouts, having some, fresh berries, that fiber is really good for you and important. And most of us are not getting enough fiber, especially women. Well, all of us. We're talking about women here. And then you can add things like chia seed and hemp seed. You can make little cereals or add it to your smoothies. So thinking about getting fiber every day is a really nice thing to do for your gut. It helps you, good fibers feed the good bacteria in your gut, plus they create bulk to help move toxins out. So that's important. On that note, it's not only fiber that helps move your bowels, it's also you need enough fats. You need fats for your gallbladder. So yeah, it's sometimes people get a little the fiber doesn't work for them, and so you also need a lot of water, and you need
I was
good
gonna
fats.
say you also need water. Lots
Yeah.
of fiber without lots of water is actually a recipe for disaster.
Yeah. Different people might need more in all those areas or only one of those areas. But yeah, getting, and I know grains are kind of, you know, not everybody's crazy about grains these days, but some grains are very high fiber, like buckwheat is good for women for balancing blood sugar and very fibrous. So yeah, there's a lot of fun foods to add that are good for your gut. And yeah, another thing to think about is reducing stress. So when we're in chronic stress, we're usually producing less what's called secretory IgA, which is like a mucosal immune substance produced in your gut that protects us. So if we're in a, you know, state of adrenal exhaustion and chronic stress, you can bet that that secretory IgA is suffering. And so stress, you know, is a whole big conversation, but just things like, you know, being in nature, being with friends, you know, taking time to just enjoy your life and not work too hard is the kernel of it.
Yeah. And considering you mentioned adrenal, I would assume also sleep would be a big one.
Yeah. So there's so much healing that happens overnight for sure. So yeah. And then the adrenals start to repair at 10 PM. So being asleep by 10 PM is like a magical thing. And not everybody with their jobs and whatnot can do that. But, I think it's great. And, encourage people who are, you know, single or to try it too. When you're a parent, it's easy to go to bed early because you kind of have to. But I feel like a lot of my single ladies, they're, you know, they're up late. And you can do that sometimes, but, you know, I think on work nights and that, you know, to aim to be in bed around 10 is a great idea.
Right. Yes. I definitely agree with that. It's great for your hormones for multiple reasons for sure, but add that to gut health. It's definitely a good idea. Awesome. Okay. Well, thank you. That was awesome. And I was wondering if you could tell us anything else about if someone wants more information about this, if they want to get in touch with you for any reason, like where they can go and find more information, get in touch with you.
Yeah. So my site is bridgetdanner.com and my name is BRIDGIT. And I know I did a blog. I can't remember when now, but I did a blog for about hormones in the gut where some of this information is written out.
Cool. And then you can link that too.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I can find that for you. And then I have a quiz on my main page. It's a hidden health stressors quiz. So it's a little interactive PDF that will help score you in each category. And one is gut, and then another is adrenal, and then one is blood sugar, and the last one is thyroid, just to kind of give you a chance to sum up some of your own symptoms and maybe see, oh, look, I was surprised to see I scored so high in this thyroid section, or I'm not surprised to see I scored so high in this blood sugar section or whatever. And then it'll give you some tips on some first steps for that. And
awesome. And those are all either hormones or very related to hormones. The thyroid is a hormone, but of course not your sex hormone, but very related to your sex hormones. So
yeah. Yeah. That's another sneaker area that goes undiagnosed.
Right. Yeah. So that sounds like it would be very helpful for anyone who might have any niggly concerns that might be like, okay, where is this coming from? What can I do next? Taking that quiz sounds like an awesome option.
Cool.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here. I learned some stuff, so that was really helpful. And thanks.
Yeah, no problem. And appreciate people listening and learning more about their bodies.
Thanks. Have a good day. Bye.